You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, March 2nd, 2011. This is episode 173. Is Facebook for you? Welcome back, everybody, to the Wells Tech Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Martin Spriggs, from the offices of the Synod Administration Building in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm Chief Technology Officer for the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod, or Wells for short, and a co-worker of mine and a co-podcaster in Sleepy Eye, Minnesota, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Great to be joining you yet again. What is this, episode 173? Can you believe we've done this?
Yep.
173 weeks in a row.
Yep. I guess I felt it a little bit this week as I was trying to figure out what my pick of the week was. I'm almost ready to start doing some reruns, you know, and revisiting some things that we've done in the past, because I'm still using them and I think they're still valuable to pass along. And we've got some new listeners who haven't been introduced to some of those concepts. But I think there's no shortage of topics. I'm just having some trouble with some picks once in a while.
Okay. You know, that's one thing about technology. It's always changing, and we could get burned out a little or feel like we're hitting a wall, but it doesn't seem like we've gotten there yet with all the possibilities for using technology in ministry, which just really excite me.
One of the neat things that I'm finding, and this episode is no exception since we're going to be talking about Facebook, is that the different uses that we're seeing for it in ministry. So we've got just a ton of examples today of how different churches and schools and other groups are using Facebook that when it started weren't even possible, but as the application has evolved, so have the uses for it as far as ministry is concerned.
Yeah. What other people are doing. I'm always fishing for ideas out there by looking at other people's creativity and then hopefully making use of it in my own sites.
So why don't we jump in? I kind of previewed a little bit what we're talking about, essentially Facebook pages again, but we've taken a pretty good hard look at how it can be used by churches. And this was all kind of launched by a question that came to us from Cindy Walker.
That's right. Cindy's husband, Kevin, serves as a staff minister at Cross of Life in Mississauga, Ontario. And they were just getting started at Cross of Life with a Facebook page, which I'll have a link in the show notes to that. When you go there, you'll be quite impressed. They're off to a great start. Kudos to you, Cindy and Kevin, for that. But Cindy wrote to me and said, you know, we're looking for some direction. Can you tell us what should be done with our Facebook page? What are other Wells churches doing on Facebook? And what are some good strategies or practices for making use of Facebook page? And I thought those were great questions. I thought it was a timely topic. And you know, when we launched our Facebook page initiative, I think it was probably about two summers ago when we first looked at them really in depth, there were just I probably could count on my fingers how many people had Facebook pages for their congregation. And times have changed, Martin. When I started looking yesterday, I ran out of time to visit all the congregational Facebook pages that are out there, but I was up in the 30 and 40 and 50 range as I continued to find more and more pages for Wells congregations. And but I think Cindy's right, you know, having a page is one thing, but having a strategy or idea how to use that page effectively is quite a different one.
One question that I get, and maybe we should talk about it here, is what is the primary use for a Facebook page, and how should it be or should it be distinguished from your regular website? And the answer that I've always given, and I'm not sure if this is true anymore or not, but I kind of think it is, but maybe you can react to this as well. I still think your website is your primary outreach tool. It is the place where the visitor is likely to go first to learn a little bit more about your church. On the Facebook side, I still feel that its sweet spot is still more for the member or friends of the congregation to get involved with the community, to get up to date on what's going on, to comment on Bible classes, and we're going to talk about a lot of those things, to see photos of the picnic, you know, those kinds of things, kind of building fellowship and community. What do you think, Sally?
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that, Martin, but I think there are ripple effects to that as well. Mm-hmm. I do like the idea that the website is your hub. If you're thinking of a wheel, it's right there in the middle. Mm-hmm. And Facebook is probably just one of several spokes you maybe have off your website. Maybe you have a Flickr account for photos and a Vimeo account for video and things like that. But it all ties back to your website. And mm-hmm. Facebook is certainly an important spoke to have on that wheel. That community conversation on Facebook is a very realistic goal for your Facebook page, but your Facebook page is also public, so mm-hmm. visitors can be judging your congregation by the content that's posted on your Facebook page, you know, and it's easy for your members or whoever likes your page to share that content, so you can be getting a wider audience that you may not be quite aware of with your
Facebook
page.
That's an interesting concept, and I guess I agree with that your Facebook page is kind of like lifestyle evangelism, so to speak, you know, and to use outreach terms, where people are observing how your members interact with each other and interact with the world, the digital world. That's a great point, and I think that's important for people to remember that it does represent your congregation. It may not be the primary tool that you point a visitor to, but they will potentially happen on it, and you want to make sure that what's there is going to be beneficial. So.
And, you know, being part of that Facebook stream conversation on someone's homepage, just inserting, letting your light shine via Facebook, inserting God's word and glorifying God with the post on your church page can strengthen your members and mm-hmm. keep them focused on what's really important when they're in this whole digital world where it's probably pretty easy to slip into a different persona,
right,
per se. And, mm-hmm. and you know, so keeping that word intermixed with their Facebook conversations is a positive thing for Christians,
sure,
to support them.
And that's why a community exists like that, is to encourage each other and also be in the word and to demonstrate the word.
So you've be thankful for that.
Yeah, I have to give you full credit, Sally, for a lot of the content that we're going to be sharing here and on the website. You've done yeoman's work. We've kind of organized the site, or the show notes, but also the conversation here into four general categories, maybe. The how-to, the setup, the content itself, just some examples of that. And then the one that I'm really interested in is the example section, where you've got just a great collection of different churches, schools, and other groups that are using Facebook as part of their strategy.
You bet, Martin. And I guess I do it to myself, but this will be one of those show notes where it'll be a linkapalooza, I guess. I'll be spending a lot of time building all these links, but mm-hmm. I think it's way worth it to look at a lot of examples to get ideas for your own
page.
So
this will be a great resource for anybody in that Facebook space.
Sure.
So why don't we start with how-to?
You bet. And the how-to, I'm actually going to point people primarily to our Wells Tech Wiki. We did document the steps. They're not that difficult for setting up a Facebook page. Facebook is rolling out some changes to their Facebook pages, and they are being previewed on pages currently, and they will take effect on March 11th. So if you have a page already, you might want to visit your page and look at some of the things that are changing. But in general, the instructions we wrote a couple of years ago are still very valid, and there's links to a lot of help and things like that when you go to that wiki page.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I found on our Facebook page with the new changes is there's a a feature area at the very top of the page for photos. So if you haven't been making use of photos on your Facebook page, you're going to want to probably add a photo album and get some pictures out there, because if you don't, it makes your page look kind of empty, because there'll be just these empty blocks in this major feature area at the top of your page.
Yep.
So I have updated our Wells Tech page to include photos of past interview folks, and so we have something in that photo area as well. But it's good, good for us to make use of photos on our Facebook pages, since that's a big feature.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Next up, regarding the setup, just once you have a page, what do you do with it? How do you get it rolling? I would highly recommend that you seek out at least 25 people to like your page. Advertise it within your inner staff of your congregation, and get people to the page and clicking on like, because you need at least 25 people to set up what's known as a vanity URL or a username on Facebook. And that means that you'll have facebook.com/ your username, a really nice compact URL. For our church, it's facebook.com/ St. John's SE, which is also our domain name, St. John's SE. So I, you know, hopefully make those hooks with people that we're using the same name on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Having that vanity URL is real powerful. You can get people to your Facebook page really quickly. And then what you want to do is advertise it. Put it in your church bulletin. Put it in whatever communications that you regularly do, so that that Facebook page link becomes prominent in a lot of places. You know, I've noticed a lot of major corporations don't even send you to their regular
right.
website anymore. They advertise that Facebook link.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's you know, that's something that you should have as part of your regular communications strategy, and you should not just do obviously that for your Facebook page, for any other digital tool that you have out there, including your website and those kinds of things, so that you are mixing your strategies, your digital and your analog strategies. Clearly the best way to get the word out is not just through online mechanisms, but you know, having your website, for instance, on your church sign, just as something as simple as that, or on your letterhead. Those kinds of things are things that you should really think hard about and make sure that you're considering as you write new letters, as you design new letterhead, and as you perhaps create a new church sign or other kinds of advertisements in the newspaper. Those kinds of things.
Certainly, you can look at your email signature as another place, so that all the electronic communications you send out have a signature that points people to your web resources as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I would encourage your members to do likewise, to find ways to share the links. And, you know, Facebook makes it really easy. If they're on Facebook, there's typically a share button with a lot of the posts on Facebook pages. So, you know, just encourage them to look for ways to sprinkle that address out to the people that they connect with. And
mm-hmm.
so more traffic can be driven to your site in that way.
Right.
And ultimately, you know, go back to that strategy that your website is really the hub of all of your communications. So as you post things on Facebook, try to drive people back to your website. Post content that will, when they click on it, lead them to your website so they can explore your church even further.
Mm-hmm.
We also heard from Leslie Bergman. She actually posted a comment on a blog post you had written a while
right.
back about Facebook pages, Martin.
Yeah.
And one of the major things that she wrote about was an application on Facebook called RSS Graffiti. And I've been playing with that a bit, and I'm quite impressed with this application. So once you have your page set up, you may want to install this RSS Graffiti application. And what it allows you to do is automatically add content to your page via RSS feeds. So you can actually hook your page up to your blog if your
right.
pastor is blogging or something like that, or you have an RSS feed of your sermon videos from Vimeo or wherever you're posting them. You could have them automatically posted to your Facebook page for you using this. And one important thing that it does as well is it ties to a Twitter account. So if you're tweeting, you can have your tweets automatically go to your page. And I know back when we all started working with pages and Twitter and things like that, there was a limitation. Your tweets were only able to go to your personal profile on Facebook, but you couldn't tweet directly to a page. But this RSS Graffiti allows you to set up tweets based on multiple Twitter accounts going to multiple things. So you can have it go to your profile page or to your pages that you've set up for your congregation or other uses. So lots of flexibility with this application. We'll definitely have links to that in the show notes.
Yeah, be sure to read through Leslie's entire comment, because she's got some really good advice. And it comes, and I know for a fact that it comes from experience. So this is not just hypothetical, I think this might work or this is the way you should approach it. But they've had their Facebook page up for quite some time, and they do a nice job of connecting the two. And she's really thought through, she and her husband Mark have really taken some time to think through how can they use this for ministry.
And they are at Good Shepherds in West Allis.
Right.
So we'll have a link to her comments and their Facebook page as well, so you can look at it as an example.
Yep, and thank you very much, Leslie, for sharing that, taking the time to write that out for us.
Yes. And next up in our conversation, we just wanted to touch on some ideas for your Facebook page. I've seen a lot of these carried out, and I think this is exciting ways to use it. You can use it to announce things,
sure.
And you can do that on a timely basis, so that, for instance, in our church, we do live video streaming every Sunday morning, and so I try to time the announcement that goes into Facebook to just be right before those service times. So if people are online, you know, that's a very synchronous activity. It has to happen at a certain time for them to be part of that. They're going to get that announcement in their Facebook stream and be able to click, and within 10 or 15 minutes, the service will be starting. So, you know, make the announcements timely if that's appropriate. Mm-hmm. I've seen people post PDF files with their newsletter information. I've seen them link to things like MailChimp messages so that people can read emails that are being sent out via MailChimp, that kind of thing. So lots of ways to include your announcements on your Facebook page. Facebook also has a function called Events, which allows you to set up events on a calendar, and you can even send out invitations to
right.
events.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's say the LWMS rally is coming up and you want to make sure the ladies of your congregation are aware of that, then you could set up an event on your calendar for that rally and send out invitations. And people can actually reply whether they plan to attend or not on the invitation event. So that's a great way to use your page. And then all of those events are kind of grouped together, and people can click in and see all the events you've added and read about them and things like that. I mentioned earlier that you could include photos. You can also include links to video. Maybe you have video hosted elsewhere on Vimeo or YouTube, or you find a cool video that you'd like to share with people. It's really super easy to add that to your Facebook page. And certainly, you can also ask for feedback on your Facebook page. So tell us what you think of the new church sign, or tell us your thoughts on today's Bible class, that kind of thing. Try to have more conversational things going on your Facebook page. And then the last category of things that I wanted to share ideas about were just regular posts to your Facebook page of meditational type materials. You could take it upon yourself to write a daily prayer and put it out there, or you could even tap into some of the Wells content, like today's devotion or Through My Bible in 3 Years, and actually add that content to your Facebook page so that people are just staying connected to the Word in their daily stream.
One thing, Sally, we should probably mention at this point is that, and probably our listeners are getting the sense for this, is this can take a lot of work. The importance of committing the time and the resources to this can't be understated. The worst thing that can probably happen is that you launch a Facebook page and market it and then provide very little reason to come back. So it's important to have that as part of your strategy. We're going to launch this, and these are all the things that, or a subset of them, that we're going to start with. And we're going to do this well, and we're going to do it consistently. versus maybe trying to do all of these things. And that might be the danger as you listen to this episode. Well, we can do this, 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 and this, and this. But you really don't have the resources, the time, or the energy to do that. So pick a few things that you know you can do well, and you know you can do consistently, and start with that, and then build on once you know you've got this under control.
I think that's great advice, Martin. And actually, we're going to hear that echoed in our interview today. We talked with Alicia Newman, who's the person behind the Wells Facebook page. And I think that was one of the lessons Alicia shares with us, is that, you know, doing too much isn't always the best route. And I think, you know, from your people that follow your page, they probably don't want to be blasted out of the water with, you know, 40 posts a day from your Facebook page alone. And so, you know, make sure what you're putting out there is quality, and don't focus on quantity, but getting things out there consistently is real important.
Exactly. So you had to wrap this section up before we jump into the interview. Just a reminder that we've got a bunch of examples. Anything you want to highlight, Sally?
Oh, I guess one, a couple that I was excited about. I noticed that Christus Evangelical Lutheran from Delavan, Wisconsin, is embedding their podcast. And I guess if you embed, if you add a link to an MP3 file, Facebook is smart enough to put a player right there on the page, so that people can listen to your podcast from your Facebook page. So they've got their sermons that they're posting each week. Similarly, we've talked before to Pastor Donald Patterson, who does a podcast for radio, or a radio cast that he repurposes as a podcast as well, called A Reason for Hope. And on their page, you can listen to their podcast right on the page. So that was something new I hadn't seen before.
And that's just by simply embedding or including the link right to the audio file.
Absolutely. And it does the rest for you. It does a lot of the work for you. I noticed that people were linking to Bible class topics and putting information online. St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Citrus Heights, California has excellent Bible class resources that they're sharing on their website. So here are this week's topics. Here's a discussion forum, that kind of thing. And then they're including links to that on their Facebook page to kind of drive people back to their website and get them deeper into the Bible studies that are going on at St. Mark's. I thought that was a real effective use of it as well. And then finally, I guess a good mention for Eastside Lutheran in Madison, Wisconsin, where their pastor is a blogging pastor. And so they're getting regular updates from their pastor's blog posted on their Facebook page. So lots of variety out there. I didn't find anybody that was just doing a million different things, but more picking these different specific things and doing them consistently, which is great examples. So
that's the point. Yep.
Whatever your flavor is, we have a load of examples to share with you. So just do a little digging, spend a little time on it. Maybe do it with your technology committee as a group. Throw them up on a projector or something, and look at some of these sites and what they're doing with their pages, and then, you know, go forth and do likewise.
That's good advice.
All right.
Thank you for all your work on this, Sally. This is great. Yeah. And I think anybody that comes to the show notes page or the wiki will really benefit from this, especially if they're interested in obviously getting a Facebook page up and going. Let's move on to ministry resources. You found an interesting... Oh, I'm sorry. We should probably have the interview.
We do have an interview.
Let's play the interview with Alicia Newman on her work with the Synod's Facebook page. We'd like to welcome today to the podcast Alicia Newman from right here in the Synod Administration Building. Good morning, Alicia.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us. You've been on the show in the past. You kind of know the deal. We wanted to have you come back and talk a little bit about some of the experiences we've had with the Synod's Facebook page, which by all accounts seems to be a success. So thanks for coming on and talking a little bit about that. You are the person that manages that for the most part, and that's a growing responsibility. So maybe before we jump into the Facebook page itself, let our listeners know a little bit about yourself and your responsibilities here in the office.
Well, like Martin said, I maintain the Wells Facebook page, but I also manage the content on wells.net. So I've been doing that for about the past year and a half since we launched the new Wells website. Mm-hmm. So, yep, my daily responsibilities include, you know, not only updating content on the Wells website, but also Facebook and trying to drive more traffic to the Wells website.
Yeah, and that's kind of good. That's a good news story, too, on the Wells.net side, because very soon we'll be seeing some content coming out of each area of ministry, which we've been, you know, kind of working behind the scenes to make happen. So that'll fill your plate as well.
Absolutely.
So give us a little bit of history of the Wells Facebook page. First of all, where is it located and how it got started?
Well, the address of the Facebook page, if you want to check it out, is facebook.com/WellsLutherans, all one word. And it was started in May of last year. And
so less than a year old.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's kind of funny. In the first couple weeks, it really blew up. You needed to get 25 fans just to be able to create a friendly URL for your page. Mm-hmm. So a few people in the building started liking the page. And within a couple weeks, there was already 3,000 people because it just spread like wildfire.
Yeah. It's a small synod. Yeah. The grapevine is pretty lubricated. So.
Yeah. So since then, we actually just hit 8,000 fans.
Awesome.
Last weekend.
So. Okay, so 8,000 fans in, you know, what, 7, 8, 9 months
mm-hmm.
time? That's not too bad. Okay. Yeah, I see on the page right now, 8,033. They don't call them fans anymore, do they?
No.
It's kind of this strange like concept, right?
Yep.
Okay. And when you started it, as you were thinking about, or as we were thinking about, you know, getting on Facebook, which I think we felt we needed to,
right.
Maybe just for the fact that everybody else was,
mm-hmm.
What were some of the goals as we started, you know, some of the objectives, what did we hope to accomplish?
Well, we really wanted to find, you know, possibly a new audience, maybe people who hadn't been on the Wells website before. The ultimate goal of our Facebook page is really to drive traffic back to wells.net. So initially it was trying to find content that resonated with people that, mm-hmm. you know, would interest them and get them to click on the link and get them back on our site and then hopefully, you know, browse
right.
around. So.
And for the most part, that's what we still have on there. It's
mm-hmm.
mostly syndicated content from wells.net. So what are we feeding there on a regular basis?
Well, I found after trying a whole variety of content, we originally did just kind of a stream of content. And some days, you know, people would get maybe 4 or 5 posts. What we've done since then is kind of whittled it down to like one message each day. And the most popular content, based on the number of clicks and the number of feedback, whether it's a like or a comment, tends to be the daily devotions, Forward in Christ articles, and the question and answers that we have on the website that our web users submit.
Uh-huh. So as far as the interaction, I guess I could key in on that because I think a lot of our congregations are doing Facebook pages and they're hoping that people are reading it. And the way that you really get that feedback is if they click they like it or if they add a comment or whatever. So mm-hmm. what kind of success stories do you have around the interaction with the web page?
Well, lately there have been a few question and answers that have been posted that generated a lot of clicks. Not necessarily people coming back to the page to like it or comment one way or the other, but I'd say the average for Q&As would be about 150 clicks. And recently there was one on dinosaurs and another one on teen relationships, like the whole boyfriend-girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And that got about 400 clicks, I believe.
And when you say clicks, that's from the analytics tool. So how many people actually read the post? Not how many people commented or liked it.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep, just the clicks. And I actually use Bitly
right.
for all my URLs so I can track real time.
Oh, so it's click-throughs, really. So you're tracking if people are reading it on their wall or in their live feed, they're actually clicking on the link to actually go to the content. So we're driving content or driving viewers to Wells.net via the Facebook page.
Correct.
Which
yep.
is great, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
so they're not just living in Facebook. They're saying, oh, I'm going to go to the Synod's website and read more about this and maybe other stuff. Right?
Exactly.
So
yep.
that's a great, I think that's probably a great objective to have for any congregation too doing this is not just living on Facebook, but, you know, getting them to your website if your website is worth getting to, of course.
Right.
So, okay. And then, Sally, I think you were kind of headed toward the interaction even just on the Facebook page, right? And it seems like that's fairly active, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep, there are a group of people. The Daily Devotion people are very active. There's a group that religiously comment on the devotions.
Mm-hmm, so to speak.
Yep. And I don't know, I guess the best feedback we've had so far is a few weeks ago, I threw a question up there just asking people, you know, how are we doing with the page and is it encouraging you in your walk of faith? Is there any other content you would like to see? And the amount of comments, it was like 200 comments.
205 right now, yeah.
And so people, for the most part, said, this is absolutely great. Don't change a thing. They suggested some other types of content, like prayers and things. But the biggest thing, which ended up being very useful for me, was people said, I want an easy way to share this. Mm-hmm. And after investigating, I found out the way that I was posting each piece of content was not easily shareable because I did it as a status update instead of as a link. So now if you see on the page, if you actually post a link instead of a status update, there'll be a little share button underneath down by where you could like or comment.
Yep.
And I've actually seen the numbers jump up of people who like the page since I started doing that. So I'm thinking people are really forwarding these to their friends now.
It's a little more viral. That's a great tip, because mm-hmm. I think that's the point, is to potentially use this not just for devotional purposes and internal communication, so to speak, but also, you know, sharing this with their network of friends. So
exactly.
That's great.
So I also heard you drop a little tip in there about using Bitly, and maybe you could kind of uncover some of the secrets that you've discovered with using Bitly, which is a URL shortener.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's, well, you know, the number one purpose is it just shortens the link. So if it displays on your post, it's not, you know, a huge URL. But what I find most beneficial about using Bitly for Facebook is that you can get real-time stats on how many people have clicked. Yep. And at any time, you can go back into your history. So I could go to a post I did last week and check how many people have clicked, you know, since I've posted it.
Mm-hmm. And is that an automated process, or do you have to manually do that?
I manually do that.
So you go out, create the Bitly link for all the Wells content.
Mm-hmm.
So do you manually enter the post then on Facebook, or does that come through in an automated fashion?
I manually post each one on Facebook.
So every day you come in and say, "Well, I got to do the daily devotion. I have to do the through the Bible and through, or whatever it is we're doing here, Q&A." Those kinds of things, or anything else that you want to throw on there?
Yep. I found that we did have at one point a way to automatically feed content onto the page. I found that it is a little bit extra work to go in and manually post it, but that way I get to provide context. So mm-hmm. even with the daily devotion, sometimes it would just pull the first sentence of the actual portion of the Bible reading, which might not catch people's attention, you know, in just those few words. So it helps to go in and craft it in such a way that it'll engage people and interest people. And I've seen a lot more clicks ever since I started manually updating the page.
Well, the whole point is to get them to read it and interact with it, right? So right. If it's just a robotic, you know, push, and we're not getting the kind of feedback that we would want, then what have you gained, really? Right. So. Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. Alicia, I do the same thing on our Wells Tech Facebook page. I add the links manually. And one thing people may not realize is if they're adding a link, it does propagate with the title and the first few sentences from whatever you're linking to, but you can actually click in and edit those.
Edit that, right.
So you don't have to live with what it adds there for you, which is a powerful thing.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that's what I've been doing too, which is, you know, you only get a certain amount of characters that do display in the first, I don't know how many characters it is, but yeah, I go in and manually adjust those to be, so it's the most engaging, compelling content, because, you know, when you're looking at your own news feed when you log into Facebook, you're not reading in depth. You know, if something catches your eye in the first minute or two, you got to get people interested. So.
Right.
Yeah, sometimes just the title itself can be a little bit long and convoluted, what it's pulling from the web page or whatever. And so just honing in on a good title for your post is a powerful thing as well.
Right.
Any issues that you're seeing in our presence and, you know, moderation things that you've had to deal with? or been pretty smooth so far?
It's actually been pretty smooth. I'd say of all of the feedback, there have only been maybe a handful or two of comments that had to be removed because they looked kind of like spam.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most,
nothing malicious or contrarian or overly contrarian, I suppose.
Every once in a while, in response to the Q&A, depending on the topic,
right.
We saw people get a little kind of passionate in their answers.
Right.
But it was interesting.
And that's okay.
And yeah, it was good discussion, but it was interesting because people kind of balanced themselves out.
Sure.
So if someone was kind of out there, the other commenters kind of reined them back mm-hmm. in. So we never really had to do anything with that
yep.
from moderation standpoint.
And I've talked about that with congregations who want to blog or open up some kind of two-way communication, that you need to be aware of that. But if you have a community, you just have to be aware that, it needs to provide that feedback right away, because you really can't let, some of those responses just sit there without a response.
Right.
Because then it doesn't, then it looks like you're saying, well, yeah, we believe the same thing.
Exactly.
But good, it's good to hear that we don't have the quote-unquote trolls, that are in there trying to muck things up. So it seems like a nice community of 8,033 people.
Yes, definitely. That's what I've seen.
And the neat part about Facebook is it's a go and tell, where the messages that we're posting out there just appear in context of all the other stuff that a person's looking at over the course of the day, the notes from the kids and the updates from the grandparents or whatever. So I think that's a winner of a communications model, and the success of Facebook kind of suggests that too. So
right.
What's coming up in the future? Are there other things on Facebook that we're thinking about doing?
I'd like to continue to look for new content that resonates with people. Every once in a while, I try to introduce something new and give it a test run and see how many clicks it gets.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the biggest goal moving forward is going to be to continue to drive traffic to the website. I was just looking at stats the other day, and Facebook is our second largest source of referrals behind Google.
Oh,
for our
okay.
wells.net site.
And Google's usually going to be at the top anyway, just from raw search and people stumbling across our site for searching Lutherans or Wells or whatever. Right. Okay. Very good. This is exciting. And I guess when we had initially talked about this, a year ago, I didn't really know what to expect, what kind of reaction we were going to get. But it's interesting it would probably be interesting to compare the number of quote-unquote hits we get, on the Facebook page versus the wells.net page even. So,
mm-hmm.
All right. Sally, you have anything else for Alicia today?
Nope. Just remind us once again, Alicia, of that URL.
It's facebook.com/wellslutherans.
Very good. Thanks for all you do, Alicia. Appreciate your time here as well.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Alicia, for taking the time. Again, the way to find the page that she manages, the Synod page with its 8,000 friends, so to speak, facebook.com/WellsLutherans.
Yep, and, you can easily share that right to your own page just by clicking on the share button as content is posted there on the Wells page. So,
yep.
Great stuff.
Sounds good. Well, now we can go on to our ministry resources.
Yeah. Actually, we should give a shout out to Staff Minister Jonathan Favorite, who's down at Crosswalk Lutheran in Phoenix, Arizona, I believe. A few weeks ago, he pointed us to a website called Table Project.
Right.
It's at tableproject.org, and it basically is a private social network specifically designed for churches. And at the time that he sent us the link, they were in private beta, and we couldn't get in and take a look, although they have a really compelling intro video that makes it, whets your appetite for what the table could do for your church. Just last week, they came out of private beta, and now it is open for registration. It's free to use. And we actually decided to kick the tires a little bit and created a Wells Tech table group. And you can go there and check it out yourself. The URL is wellstech.tableproject.org. And when you go there, you'll have to click the link and join the site. I will tell you that joining the site, they do ask for personal information. They require you to include your address and date of birth. And the philosophy behind it is that it would be within a congregation, and they're not necessarily going to share that address information. You can control the privacy, but they can do things like mapping of where the members are and things like that, so you can get a feel for how close they are to the church location and that kind of thing. To get signed up, you'll also need our secret code, which is WellsTech, all lowercase, WellsTech. If you're interested at all, you certainly can go out and create an account, and I can actually make you an administrator on the page as well, just to play around with the different administrative features. So check it out if you think a private social platform for your church may be the way to go, and you know, watch their demo video at a minimum and see what you think.
It's got some interesting possibilities there. I think they are trying to really focus on ease of use versus some of the other intranet kinds of solutions I've seen. So it may be just a ticket for some folks. So give it a shot.
It does allow you to see things at a church-wide level, and you can have things like prayer list and discussion forums and that kind of thing. But then it allows you to set up groups within your church. So maybe the ladies' aid group or whatever could have their own separate prayer list. And unless you're a member of that group, you wouldn't be seeing their discussions or prayer list or whatever. So it has a global level within the congregation, and then group levels as well. And it's fairly easy to work with.
One thing that it doesn't look like it allows at this point is file uploads. Is that your experience, Sally, in playing with the site?
Yeah. I can't say that I found a way to do that. I think I added some photos.
Right. You can,
but I'm
do
not
photos,
sure about
you
files.
Get calendar items, discussion boards, that kind of stuff, but no files. So in that sense, it's not a true intranet kind of a solution, more a social information sharing group. So, okay. All right, shall we move on to our picks of the week?
You bet. And mine is actually a Google Chrome extension. It's called, Handy Extension puts right-click properties back in Chrome. And it's an article from Lifehacker. The extension name is actually Image Properties Context Menu. Not real catchy, but
yeah.
If you are a Chrome fan, which is becoming more and more popular for a browser of choice, particularly because of its speed. I love how snappy Google Chrome is. You may have noticed if you right-click on a particular image that you can't get image properties and that kind of thing. And for me, I make use of that a lot. I may want to find out the dimensions of an image or something of that effect. And so this was something that was really missing in Google Chrome for me. I was feeling the need for some kind of a solution for this. The only option that you got was to inspect the element, and it would actually open up the coding on the page, and you would see the image source codes. And sometimes in that image source code, the width and height of the image was listed, but not always. And so this was a challenge for me as I worked with this wonderful Google Chrome environment. But now with this plugin, when you right click on an image, a new menu item appears, and it's called Image Properties. And when you click on that, then you get the image location and the dimensions and the file size and that kind of thing, the kind of properties you're used to seeing in Internet Explorer and Firefox when you right click. Those are available now with this Google Chrome extension. Mm-hmm. So I know that's kind of quirky, but if you're used to right-clicking and getting to image properties, this is a huge breakthrough for you. So check it out.
Very good. My pick of the week is as I mentioned at the top of the show, it's getting a little bit harder, although this little device has been in my travel bag for over a year now, and I wouldn't really live without it. I just never thought to suggest it as a pick. It's a little It's a little device from Targus. It's a Targus presenter. It's essentially, it hooks up to your machine, allows you to advance PowerPoint slides, or it'll work with Prezi and a few other things as well. It's very simple to use, very small, very compact, fits nicely in the palm of your hand. You simply load it up, you add a little USB connector to your laptop, and you turn the device on with, it takes two AAA batteries, and it advances slides, or it backs them up, or loads it into screen view or presentation mode if you're in PowerPoint. Very simple. It's only got a couple buttons and works for both Mac and PC. It's great. It works up to, I think it's about 50 feet you can be away from the device that you've got it hooked up to. And it just strikes me as just very basic but very functional. And again, very small, so you don't have to hold on to something or keep running back to your laptop to advance slides. I can see an application for this in any kind of situation where you're using a PowerPoint, for instance, whether that be a Bible class so that you can roam the room a little bit, confirmation class, whatever it may be where you're using these presentation technologies. This little device is really good to use, and it's very inexpensive. I think it's under $30 maybe, something like that. You could probably find it on Amazon, maybe even cheaper. So well worth the cost, and it allows you the flexibility to operate your presentation while not having to be right in front of your machine. So that's the Targus presenter.
My husband's a big fan of this type of technology, and I guess it's worth saying that the two buttons that are available to you do allow you to go backwards in your presentation as well. So you aren't just stuck with advancing slides, but you can navigate around a little bit without too much difficulty. So I think the one he has a laser beam light.
Yeah, mine does not, but you pay, I think, $5 or $6 more, and you can get the one with the laser pointer. Yep.
Okay.
So,
good stuff.
It is. Let's move on to community feedback.
Sure. We had a few people talking to us this week. First off, we heard from Rachel Arnold. And boy, I didn't look up what congregation she's from. It's somewhere in western Wisconsin. And she is a listener. She actually won our Wells Tech contest back around Christmas time when we were doing the QR codes. So shout out to Rachel, who's also now a blogger. And she has a blog called Chosen by Christ. And I was just really excited to find Rachel's blog because she's a pastor's wife, and she's blogging about life in the parsonage and her own personal walk of faith. And she's a woman. And, you know, if you listen to our feedback section very often, you'll notice that it's pretty dominated by men who are techie. So it's exciting to hear a woman's voice out there as well. And I'm really interested in Rachel's blog post and thank her for sending her blog link in. We'll have a link in the show notes. And she is trying to do our Wells Tech weekly challenge, Martin, trying to keep up with blogging at least once a week throughout the year 2011. So good luck with that, Rachel. So far, you're off to a great start.
Yeah, and how are you doing, by the way?
I'm on it. I'm
you
keeping
are.
Up.
I noticed that. You're probably a little bit ahead of me. I'm doing it every week, but you've done it actually more than once a week.
More than once a week. And I came up with a new category on my blog called Fave 5, and I have a big, long list of favorites, techie things and personal favorites and things related to our church and all kinds of things that I'm going to be doing throughout
nice.
The year.
Good strategy. I like that.
Yeah. Next up, we had an email from Pastor Steve Oldry, and I didn't look up his congregation either. I'm really not too with it today, Martin. Sorry.
Well, you were really focused on the Facebook side.
That's
we'll,
get, the thing.
We'll cut you a little slack.
I know Steve's in western Wisconsin as well, somewhere in the La Crosse area. He was a classmate of my husband's a year or two ahead of him.
Okay.
But, he was looking for ideas about recordings for shut-ins. They're using cassette tapes currently and dubbing those and distributing them to their shut-in ministry. And he wondered if other people have more up-to-date ideas. They're looking to revamp that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the first thing that came to mind would be recording to a CD or
DVD.
Something
mm-hmm.
a little more digital
right.
Than a cassette tape. But I think there's challenges there as well. You have to make sure that the members that you're delivering to have that capability to play those things. Another option I've heard of people doing is purchasing some inexpensive MP3 players, and circulating those, juggling those in and out, so that you're constantly adding new content for people to listen to on an MP3 player. That too may have its challenges. I'm not sure that the older people are able to have the finesse to do all the buttons and things.
Some of those
on an
buttons
MP3
are very
player.
Small, even for me.
Especially those cheaper MP3
right.
players. They can do the trick, but I'm not sure that's a real effective way
user interface is not always the best either on some of those.
In our church, we actually don't do tapes to individual members. We're on the local cable station.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's our shut-in outreach is to be on TV. We deliver a videotape, or I shouldn't say videotape, a DVD to two local cable stations, and we're on in the area that way. What about at Peace, Martin? Do you guys do
We are something? Just working through that exact same issue. We used to have a tape ministry, and then our tape duplicator just kind of crutched out, and we are actually going to try the DVD route with the video, and try and make sure that all of our shut-ins are equipped with that. Most we're finding are, so they have a DVD player connected to their TV. Those that are technically challenged typically rely on family members anyway to come in and help them with that, so we're counting on that to continue as well. So. That's
so
the
did
direction
you buy a
headed.
DVD duplicator?
Yep, we did. We have one. We have it's actually still in the box. We haven't hooked it up, and we're still just trying to work out some audio issues we're having with our sound system. So once that's all squared away, we will do the disc duplication. And we'll probably load up about 4 services on a DVD, or sermons for the most part, not the whole service, and then have our shut-in pastor deliver that when he makes his once a month visit.
Sounds like a good plan.
Yep.
We actually have a setup as we're recording the service. We have 3 DVD recorders set up, in line. And so we record 3 in at the same time as the service and then hand them to the delivery person. And they go to these 3 different locations for the cable TV connection. And
that's good if that's all the copies you need. Yeah, but that's a great idea.
Don't do any post-production, which is nice because it's hard to get the commitment to make all those duplicated copies and things like that.
So. Yep, that's a great idea. So you've got them right there right after the service is over.
Yep.
You've got them ready to go.
We just have to, I don't know, there's a finalization process. Mm-hmm. So it takes about 5 minutes after the service is done and the DVDs are ready to go. So.
Right, great idea.
Yeah. All right. Then we heard from this fellow, Martin Spriggs. He posted a few links on Digo for the class. Can you share those with us?
Sure. And that's why I post them there. One of them is just kind of an update to something we've talked about in the past. There's a company called Square, and I don't have the website in front of me. SquareUp.com,
yep.
I think. They've gotten a little more competitive with some of the bigger players, and they're growing themselves. They have removed the transaction fee that they used to charge for each transaction. Remember, you may recall our conversation about this little device that you can get that'll hook up to a smartphone or either Android or iPhone through an app. It plugs into your audio jack and allows you to swipe credit cards and charge the account. I set this up on my own account and sent money to myself back and forth through my credit card. And they still take the discount fee, which is essentially like the 3 or 3.5%, or maybe it's 2.5. I don't have their information right up in front of me. But they have removed that per transaction charge. And that's just pennies on the dollar. But it's, again, some savings, and it takes a little bit of the complexity out of it as well. But these do tend to work pretty well. There's a couple of companies now doing this, but there are many applications for this kind of thing for both churches and schools, and whether it be taking tuition payments or even accepting credit cards at the concession stand or whatever it may be, there are plenty of uses for something like this. So good news on that front.
Exciting to see those fees going down. That means more money in the pocket, so that's
right.
good.
Yep, exactly. And then the other thing I wanted to call everybody's attention to was some good news coming out of Google, especially for those people who use Google Docs and also use regular Office documents and storing them on Google Docs. They've created a little plugin or a little add-in that you can add to Microsoft Word, for instance, that allows you to sync your documents automatically from Microsoft Word. It works for Excel and PowerPoint, I believe, as well. It lets you sync those documents up to Google Docs. You've for some time been able to upload regular Word docs up there, but you've never been able to keep them in sync with local copies. So what this allows you to do then is to collaborate or share files with other people. So you sync them up to Google Docs, you share the document with somebody else, and they can download it and use their copy of Microsoft Word to edit it. In fact, you can edit them at the same time, just like you can on a Google Doc. And that has some possibilities as well. So this could act in some fashion as your congregational intranet. If you wanted to do some file sharing, just use Google Docs, which you've got a lot of storage on, and then you can connect that with regular Office documents and collaborate on them and keep them in sync.
It's a mashup world we live in. Huh?
It is, yep.
All right.
So that's a nice step for Google, and they've recognized that people do work in Microsoft Office, and they're not all using Google Docs as far as their word processor. So this is a step, I think, in the right direction.
Very good.
Next week, we are going to be returning to the book, Chapter 7, Leading 21st Century Schools. And we'll talk about a number of things. Increasing communications is the big theme here, and especially as it relates to internal staff, making sure everybody's on the same page and how you're sharing ideas, how you're sharing move forward strategies across the faculty, across the school board, across the school itself, and trying to make sure that everybody is informed. And we'll talk about things like wikis, blogs, and intranets. So tune in next week for that.
Invite a principal near you to listen.
Yeah, it'd
be
cool.
A perfect podcast for them to get started mm-hmm. with Wells Tech.
Sure. Let's close the show with the music of Michael Schrader, his song The One from his album Fuel for the Soul. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next week.
transgressions, I can feel my spirit die. Unable to save myself beyond death, I reach for your light. But this Jesus came and it died for all.